Welcome to Wealthy After 40. Ready to ditch debt, retire sooner, and live life on your own terms? Only 54% of Gen Xers feel prepared for retirement, and 22% believe they will live a comfortable lifestyle. So if you're feeling like your finances are a hot mess express, you are not alone. I'm Daylene Higgins, founder of Elevate Finances and money coach for Gen Xers. I reached my dream of retiring at 50 while helping our daughter through college, and now I want to help you do the same. It's time to stop avoiding your finances like the plague and start having confident conversations about money. Join me every week to talk about personal budgeting, debt payoff, saving for retirement, money mindset, and leaving a legacy for future generations. Okay, friends, let's talk money. Welcome to today's episode of Wealthy After 40. I'm excited to have a guest today, Sam X. Rennick. He is the driving force behind Sammy Rabbit and the Money School. Sam is dedicated to empowering kids' dreams and improving children's financial literacy through the development of great habits and strategic life skills. Sam has read and sung off key with over 250,000 children around the world, encouraging them to get in the habit of saving money and reading. So, Sam, thank you for joining us. And I just want to ask you, where did your passion for teaching or focusing on young children come from?
Well, first, you're very welcome, Daylene, and thank you for having me. I want to wish everybody out there in Daylene land and Sammy land a Sammy-rific day. You know, this passion awoke within me when I was roughly around 40 years old. I was in my second career in financial services, largely not enjoying it. But a couple things I did enjoy were these weekly training sessions we'd have with these seasoned professionals that would come from all over the United States to try and get us to offer their products. They were usually great storytellers, and one day this person showed up with an Etch-a-Sketch and a bubble blower, and I thought, you know, what is he up to? What is his angle here? And basically what he wanted us to do was open college savings accounts for our clients, and that was something I was already doing, so it resonated with me. But more importantly, it got me to thinking about, you know, why did I get on a path when I was 21 where I was automatically saving and investing and spending less than I had earned? So I just started thinking a lot about that and realized that one of the big influences was my father. And this was a little bit unusual in the sense that we were living in what I would now describe as upper poverty. So we didn't have any discretionary income, but we had food to eat every day and a place to sleep, and I had my brother's hand-me-down clothes. So we had basically what we needed. But you know, when I would go to him frequently, like, you know, for a dime for soda was a dime back then, so I am pretty old but young at heart. And anyways, he would you know, almost always say, no, we don't have money for that. We, you know, kind of what the message was, more or less, we watch our money carefully, and your mom and I will be making those choices, not you. So they laid that boundary out there, you know, pretty clearly. But still, you know, we're kids, so, you know, we persist with these requests. But what he would also add was, he would say, Sam, you can have anything you want if you're willing to work for it. Are you willing to work for it? And so, you know, frequently I'd say yes. And then he'd say, well, let me see what I can do. And he'd call our aunts, uncles, whoever, and, you know, he'd ask them if we could wash their car for a dollar or two. And then, you know, he would find money for soap, and he'd be out there helping us do that, developing within us a very strong work ethic. So I always found that a very hopeful message. And, you know, now that I'm older, I see, you know, the wisdom in an approach like that, it being very hopeful, motivating, but also a lot of foresight that just because we're in a situation at this moment doesn't mean we have to remain in this situation, that there's things you have agency as a person, and there's things you can do and control and take charge of them. And, you know, having an enthusiastic willingness to work could be one of them. But then you need to, you know, once you do that, that's one part of the equation. Then I think what you want to do, and this is more or less what he said, is you want to start making, you know, good money choices that align with both your values and what you really want. So there are these temporary wants. You know, they seem real at the moment, but usually you work for them and you discover that isn't really what you want, even though you asked for it, you said you wanted it, maybe even wish for it. So, you know, fast forward, I'm 40. I'm starting to think about this. I'm also at a transition point in my life where I'm asking myself, you know, what's my purpose here? How can I contribute? You know, what talents do I really, you know, have? And what really, you know, burns fire or passion within me? And at that point, I think I'd been in financial services maybe 8 or 9 years. Another interesting thing had happened, and this was actually something in addition to the training that I enjoyed, and that was just talking to people, and they were mainly around my age, let's say between 30 and 50, and, you know, 95% of them had the same story, and that was, oh, I wish, you know, I had started saving or investing earlier, or I wish someone had talked to me, or I wish I had listened to whoever talked to me. You know, often what I found out is people say, you know, they wish someone had talked to them, but probably somebody did talk to them, but, you know, they didn't act on it for a whole variety of reasons. So I thought, you know what, maybe there's something I can do. I like this idea of coaching, guiding, encouraging people to execute what I'll describe as the basics of money. And that would be to prioritize saving and investing and spending less than you earn. I thought to myself, you know, those are messages that are simple to communicate. I think they're transformational if you act on them. And those are the types of messages I think that, you know, apply to adults, but they certainly apply to kids. And so, you know, I further thought to myself, you know, if I could only of those three communicate one message, which would it be? It largely was this idea of pay yourself first, which we translated for kids. Saving is a great habit. You know, we invented this character to deliver the message, to make it fun. Now, I did something that may have not been so fun, but I created a storybook. I think storybooks are fun, but, you know, a lot of people don't like to read, including kids. But I think reading is one of these discriminatory skills in this sense that they distinguish you from other people. When you read, it's very important to do. Plus, I do think reading and listening are key skills to have success. And so I wanted to start with a storybook and a simple message that saving is a great habit. And in fact, in our first book, It's a Habit, Sammy Rabbit, we don't even mention money. We just use this concept, this language to help develop a mindset. I read one of your blogs about like a toddler's view of money, and you talk about mindsets. And we're at SammyRabbit.com. We're very big on mindsets, language, seeding the language, exposing, introducing kids to it at an early age to start building, you know, hopefully their thinking, but their feelings, their attitudes towards money. So, you know, I can go on forever. Thank you for asking, Daylene. I'll stop there.
Yes, I love it, Sammy. This is just great. Is teaching children at such a young age so important? Tell us the primary ages you're trying to target with the song and the reading.
Okay, so it's, you know, what I've discovered, and this has mostly been, you know, I've been at it for over 20 years now. It's, you know, I've just been learning a lot of lessons. I'm still learning lessons. So, like, one thing you realize is if you're not on television, this is back in 2000 now, it's still, I think, television, but YouTube, and we're a little bit on YouTube, but for the most part, who you're targeting are parents and adults. They are the ones who give you access to the kids. So you have to be talking to both, essentially, and initially probably more to the parents or the teachers or the nonprofit leaders or the faith-based leaders or whoever it is that will give you access to the children. And then when you're with the children, you better have great ways. It's not enough to know the messages. You have to have interesting ways of bringing them to the kids. And then not only that, you need to really break it down and layer it, almost like a video game. So, you know, that's what we spend a lot of time thinking about. And that's another lesson. I don't think you can spend enough time thinking about like all these steps, you know, and so for me, it really does begin with the language and the words. You know, it could be money, it could be saving, you know, language is very complex, particularly English, but I think it's all languages. So what I mean by that is when you look at the word save, it has 9 or 10 different meanings. So the context is really important. But, and then when you think about like, well, how kids might be introduced to the word save or saving, it's probably going to be associated with rescuing. Yeah. You know, like a storybook about a prince or a princess rescuing someone, something like that. But let's just say it happens to be in the context of money, then it's probably more likely that they're going to be introduced to it, what I call saving spending, like spend some money to save some money, not saving, accumulate, protect for emergencies, be prepared for opportunities, advance your financial stability, security, well-being, wealth, and all of that stuff. So this is one of the reasons I think it's very important to start talking to kids early, because, you know, for a whole lot of reasons, and they may all make sense, they're probably going to start forming this relationship going down the wrong path with money as it relates to advancing your wealth, your wellness, your wealth, your well-being, your security, and all of that. Another reason why it's extraordinarily, I think, important to start teaching kids as early as possible, definitely before 8, and that's what you want to do. I shouldn't say just teaching. It should be intentionally teaching, consciously teaching, because teaching all the time, especially from a toddler's point of view, a toddler, all they do is absorb information, and they do it very well. They may not be able to articulate it, but they're embodying it into their attitudes, their feelings, all of that stuff, other than when they're sleeping, and they may be thinking about it when they're dreaming, who knows, but they're seeing and they're hearing. So they're taking in all the sights and sound. Oh my goodness, we can't pay the rent, you know? And they're like, oh wow, the rent, you know? And they may be thinking or feeling that's a scary thing, whatever that is. But, you know, a lot of it leads to, let's say at age 3 or 4, maybe 5, where they say, mommy, daddy, give me this. Or I, in my mind, tells you that it's all, for the most part, whatever being input is now coming out with this, basically money is for spending and getting things and not necessarily the right things. So then, you know, if you intervene later, you know, you're working against that tide, and it isn't easy to do. Like anything. So that's another thing. Then when you think about, you know, when you start diving in deeper, parents are, you know, unquestionably the number one influence of young kids. Now, you know, according to a whole variety of studies, parents are not that well informed about, you know, personal finance, but by and large. And even if you're pretty informed, you still may not be extraordinarily informed. You know, there's levels, and you should be learning about it, I think, for your whole life. There's different challenges you face at different periods, but just trying to get the basics down is one thing, and that's not easy to do. Getting them down may not be that hard, getting them down like knowledge-wise, but then executing on them, okay, that's a lot harder. All we have to do is think about exercise. Almost everybody understands, you know, walking is good for you, but, you know,
it doesn't make us 10 or
20%, they're doing it. Yep. The other 80% of us are struggling at it, even though we know we should be doing that. So, you know, a lot of people realize, you know, that they should be saving, but they're not, for a whole, you know, variety of reasons. I myself, I'm not as personally concerned with what the reasons are. I'm more concerned with trying to motivate them to take action using what I would describe. There might be a lot of ways that work, but there are some approaches that are time-tested, proven, more reliable. Those are the strategies that interest me the most. So when you're looking at young kids, so their parents may or may not be talking to them consciously about money. If they are, they may not be, you know, leading them on a path that is predictably or reliably going to advance their, I'll just call it financial wellness. That encompasses security, wealth, all of those things, stability from my standpoint. Then you have these other influences that they're exposed to. You know, some are, you know, relatives, friends, whatever they are. And there's these outside influences beyond that circle that are very intentional. Let's call them advertising and media. 99.9% of their messages are about spending money and not necessarily spending it smartly. Okay, we're all going to spend money. And so, you know, I think what you want to do is you want to spend smart and slowly build or fast if you're able to towards managing, allocating, using, spending money towards your values and what it is you really want and need. Wants are very important. But if you treat all wants the same, and if you treat them, let's say prioritize, when I say treat, I really mean prioritize. If you prioritize them all the same, and then you prioritize, you know, you confuse needs with wants, you're going to have struggles, probably. Now, look, there's exceptions to every rule, principle, however you want. So we're just talking by and large. So what you find out from the research and also common sense is by 7 or 8 during this, like, you know, period of time where you're thinking, you're hoping, you know, your kids are having this fantasy childhood, which other than in Disney movies, I don't know where it happens. Doesn't seem to happen in real life, but their minds, their feelings have already been coded with all this information related to money. Parents, and this could be even experts and teachers, grossly underestimate what impact that has had on them with respect to what they're going to be doing with money and how value, and people have all these other feelings, let's just say not related to the numbers of money or the execution as it relates to, you know, advancing financial wellness, undermine our well-being essentially. And I'm not trying to say they're right or they're wrong. I'm just saying, look, there's a formula. If you want chicken soup, chicken is going to need to be a part of it. Okay. Yeah. Otherwise it still might be soup, but maybe it's not chicken soup. So kids are preyed upon both purposefully. And then it's not so much that they're preyed upon, but they're provided a lot of information. Let's just say it's all well-meant, but often they're not, I'll use the term, they're not winning recipes or strategies or formulas. Once you get out of this like 7 to 8 stage, maybe 8 to 12 or maybe 12 to 15, somewhere in there, you want to get, I think, a pretty good understanding. And kids have this, they may not be able to articulate it, but say where you're at, if we call life a game in the game. And this is, I'm referring more to economically. So that if you understand where you're at, and then you also develop clarity on where you want to go, you have a better chance, okay, a better probability of getting there. I think in America in particular, there are just so many tremendous stories of people being able to transform their economic situation in one generation, sometimes in 5 years, sometimes in 10 years, often over a 40-year period. For many people, that doesn't happen. When you look at the analyze, let's say the choices that they make, especially habitually. We're very habit focused. You see that those, like, let's just say this simple idea, I'll save when I'm able to, as opposed to I'm going to prioritize saving over almost everything. And there might be a few exceptions, water, basic food, clothing. There aren't many. Let's call these, I won't even call them needs. I'm going to call them necessities. And so you're paying yourself first. So I'm just saying, if you just look at the math of it, that produces predictable advances in financial wellness. Saving or investing when you're able to get to it does not produce predictable financial wellness. It just seems there's always more to spend on, probably for good reason. The part that we are going to spend, let's say it's a universal law, it's basic economics. You know, the fewer resources you have, the more consequential the outcomes of those choices. Therefore, it makes sense that you invest more thought, planning into how you're going to use those resources. I'm not going to address, is that fair or not fair? But that is, to me, I'll say that's a very reality-based. You're looking at, you're saying, I'm here. I want to get there. This is what I have. And then it comes, okay, now you're going to get tested. Are you really committed to that? Okay. I talk to my nephew about this all the time, daily. And I'm like, it wasn't my choice, but as a kid, let's say for 15 years, we ate two things almost every day for lunch, peanut butter and jelly or bologna and cheese. Okay. Once in a while, I think they threw in tuna. That was a great day.
Yep.
Man, I watch what he and his son eat, and they're extraordinarily fickle. If every little thing is not right, they don't eat it. And what I see is that produces a lot of inefficiencies and waste. Whatever you describe as enjoy or just pure fun, you should build into your smart spending. You know, I enjoy soda. So if I could have it every day, you know, every day or once a week or whatever it is. Look, here was another thing I thought about is when I was thinking about this, I thought, you know what, you've got to start early. Okay. So, I started investigating a little bit into this whole thing people call now financial wellness, but financial education, literacy, you know, there are distinctions, but they're largely, you know, they largely mean the same thing. There's a lot of overlap, but then when you get into the last, let's say 10 or 20%, there are distinctions between, let's say, financial competence, knowing something and being competent at it or skilled at it.
What is the most important thing parents can do to begin educating their children about money?
Let me just start with the number one, what I think is the number one lesson, and that is to get your kids in the habit of saving money. All right. Kids don't have bills. They don't have expenses. Get a nice transparent glass, a jar, whatever you want. Get a recyclable. Start dropping pennies in there or nickels, whatever you want. Have your kids do it. You do it. If they're babysitting in their high chairs, drop it in yourself. Shake it up. Make some noise. Infuse some joy into this idea that we're building something. And we're doing it because we believe in you and your future. Things like that come up, you know, define if they're able to some very short, people like to call them money scripts. The Higgins were savers. Okay. and then shake that bank. Okay. we're going places. We're going to college. We're going to travel. We're going to build a business. And even if we don't, we're going to be prepared to do it, and we'll find other good uses of that money if we don't use it for those things. The reason I emphasize saving is for a variety of reasons. It has to do with all the benefits that learning or making a habit of saving communicates, empowers a child with. The biggest may be learning to delay gratification. Okay, that's the mother skill of all success. In my opinion, it's transferable. That's something saving does beyond the financial wellness aspects of it. It also does what I shared earlier. It helps to build confidence and esteem. Saving in and of itself is an education. You know, if you fall off your bike, get back on. It's, you know, we're not perfect. And so we've got to allow ourselves room for errors. If you get around people who want to learn and will ask questions of you or test your thinking in a constructive way, I found that very helpful on all topics.
And this has been a great discussion, Sammy. I appreciate you. For those of you listening, go find him at his website is sammyrabbit.com. He can also be found on LinkedIn and Facebook. Under Facebook, it's Official Sammy Rabbit. On LinkedIn, it's the company sammyrabbit.com. And go find what he has. His website is amazing. A lot of information, a lot of exciting songs, coloring products. So go check it out. So appreciate it. And we'll chat with you soon.
Thanks for listening. Every week, my goal is to help you get one step closer to financial freedom and making confident decisions so your money starts working for you. Having a community of support is important to your financial success. I would love to have you join me in my free Facebook community, All Things Personal Finance. Inside this group, every live training, action challenge, and posts are filled with tips and strategies to help you progress to financial freedom. If you have questions from today's episode or want to learn more, follow me on Instagram at Elevate Finances. If you're looking for personalized support to get your finances on track, check out my website at elevatefinances.us to learn more about how I can support you with one-on-one coaching. Thanks and have a wonderful day.